We do have Russ on the phone. And, folks, I want to introduce you, if you missed our show in January, want to introduce you to one of the best independent investigative journalists, Russ Baker. Good morning, Russ.
Good morning. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Okay, all right. Maybe that'll help a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so Russ has a website, folks. It's whowhatwhy.com. He also has an incredible book that he's written that once he came and visited Las Vegas and folks learned about it, a lot of people bought his book. Sin? It's Family Secrets. You have the...
Yes, Family of Secrets.
Family of Secrets.
Sorry, Russ. Family of Secrets.
The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years.
All right. So Russ does a thing called forensic journalism, and we really appreciate you being on the air with us this morning, Russ.
Sure. It's my pleasure.
And we've got Jim Turr, who introduced me to you back in January. I was really glad to get to meet you.
Hi, Russ. I haven't seen you in a long time.
Good morning, Jim. Good to hear your voice.
Same here.
So, Russ, one of the things that got us wanting to have you back on our show, besides that you do incredible journalism independently of the mainstream and the corporate world, but you also, on September 11th, posted an incredible piece about what may really be behind the wars in Afghanistan. Can we start there?
Sure. Do you want me to summarize?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so a lot of the work that we do at Who, What, Why is a kind of a response to what is put out by the corporate media. In other words, we take what they report, and we don't so much dispute it as we try to expand on it, or we try to look at what sort of is being said between the lines. And that's not so much a criticism of them as it is a comment on the limitations of that form, that for a variety of reasons they're only able to say so much and only go so far. But we have no such limitations because we're a nonprofit supported entirely by members of the public. We hope soon to be supported by more members of the public, but by members of the public, and so we're able to go deeper. So in this case, we're playing off of several articles that have appeared in the New York Times and elsewhere, one of which, a few years ago, a couple of years ago, the New York Times published an article in which they reported that a small team of Pentagon officials and American geologists had discovered that actually Afghanistan, which we had been told was a poor country with very little in the way of natural resources, actually was sitting on a vast trove of mineral wealth. And when we saw that on whowhatwhy.com, we noted it and we said, how likely is it that this was just discovered? Now, how do Pentagon officials discover it? Well, right. They don't do the digs themselves. They discovered it actually in the files of the Afghan government. So we are expected to believe that in all these years that the U.S. has been involved in Afghanistan, we didn't know what the Afghan officials themselves knew, which was that they were sitting on tremendous resources. And so that just didn't seem to make any sense, just logically, and we pointed that out. Now, recently, the New York Times has a new article, and this one basically says that it's great news to learn, you know, how much there is in the way of natural resources, and that this is the road to a happy ending in Afghanistan, that this can it brings about hopes of a, quote, more self-sufficient country, if only the wealth can be wrested from blood-soaked soil. Now, as we point out on whowhatwhy.com, the New York Times here is basically, they're eliding the central issue. In other words, they're saying, isn't it great that we just discovered that these poor people are sitting on all this, and if they can only get access to their resources, everything will be hunky-dory, and our honorable intentions of going in to try to help these people will be realized. And so what we point out here is that it sounds a lot like a fairy tale. It doesn't make any sense. And in fact, one of the recurring themes on Who, What, Why is that policy, foreign policy of really all countries, is self-serving. And so when people are told your country is going into this place for honorable moral reasons, that they are going in to help people, that they are going in order to do nation building or to create democracy or to help the women of a country, it's transparently false, because that's never the reason for a country to do something. Or let's say it's hardly ever. Let's put it that way. And it's the same thing if you look at a company. When companies say, you know, we are a green company, if they are a green company, whatever that means, it's primarily because that's good for business. It's not because that's the end goal, except for certain, you know, small, very unusual startups.
So Jim, did you have a question for Russ? I think Jim was trying to get in there.
No, I wasn't trying to get in.
Oh,
I was saying,
okay.
Russ, it sounds a little low at this end. I hope he's coming across loud on the air.
Yeah, he's showing up on the meters here. So, well, Russ, you did put out a couple of things there before we go any further. One is I wanted to ask you about when George W. Bush was first elected, one of the first things he did was he began actually X-raying the planet, doing X-rays into the surface of the Earth. And the extractive industry, the corporate extractive world, was quite excited about this. And I assumed it was because the U.S. was then going to be able to map all of the mineral resources around the world and find all those secret underground bunkers and all this other stuff. Does this fit into the story at all? Do you know?
Well, let's put it this way. All you have to do is look at his campaign contributions, and you will see that right from the beginning of his career, in my book, Family of Secrets, we go all the way back to, say, 1978, where a young George W. Bush actually ran for Congress in West Texas. And if you take his campaign finance reports and you print them out, they're, a few inches, a couple of inches thick. And there's this astonishing array of people all over the country giving money, and a very large percentage of them are involved with extractive industries. This is the most profitable industry that the world has ever seen. It continues to be, even as we focus on sectors like entertainment and tech. It's extraction that really is the name of the game. And so they have always funded him. They funded his father. The grandfather was very involved with them. The whole reason that the Bush family moved out west from Greenwich, Connecticut, was to stake a claim on the extractive industries. And so, yes, that's absolutely right, that this is what's driving all of this. And it's hard to say no. You know, even those in this country who consider themselves to be environmentalists or liberals or whatever, so many earn their living directly or indirectly from the extractive industries. Our large law firms, many of them, if not most of them, the extractive industries are big clients for them. Same things with advertising agencies and PR firms and what have you. And so we're all kind of hooked into this thing. And the failure to sort of talk about it and the consequences and what this has to do with our inability to sort of save life on Earth itself, to step up to the challenge of climate change, it's all related, and it absolutely goes back through to the beginning of Bush's presidency, but it also permeates Obama's presidency as well.
And the second piece I just wanted to put out there, and then Jim has a comment or a question, is that the timing of your release of this story on the 11th anniversary of 9/11 was actually quite perfect. You know, people were being patriotic and celebrating that our soldiers went in, and many have died. In fact, more died just yesterday, a couple of Marines, and they're there for patriotism when really it's at the bidding of the corporate world. The soldiers are being used as pawns too. So I was really glad to see that you put out a good forensic piece on why we're really in Afghanistan. Jim, you had a comment or question?
Well, yeah, the one question I was going to ask was about your Afghanistan thesis, and you've just covered that. And I have a follow-up on that based on something I heard you say in a talk, unless I have it wrong, and I want you to let me know if I have it wrong. And it totally follows up on that business of that we're all complicit in the extractive industries, and if we drive, we are, of course. But I heard you say one time, if I heard you correctly, that, you know, and I thought this was an extraordinary display of balance and fairness on your part that demonstrates once again that you're not really an ideologue, right-wing or left-wing.
That's right.
But I heard you say one time in a Q&A, somebody asked you something about, is Obama just another sneaky politician totally having his strings pulled and at the bidding of corporations? And you said, well, you have to be fair about it and think about the fact that if you're president of the United States, you're suddenly in a very unusual position. You do feel responsible to maybe go overboard, to not let the country be attacked, not let it run out of oil, and everything else. So you're suddenly got a whole new perspective on everything that you have to be somewhat aware of, being in the driver's seat. Do you have anything more to say about that? And would that, you know, could that explain, help us be more understanding about what's going on in Afghanistan and political affairs in general?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. You see this, for example, I was talking earlier about corporations. You see people who maybe were in government and they were very, you know, idealistic to some extent, as, let's say, as a senator or a member of the House, and really, on you might say, very righteous in respect. And then they become the head of a trade industry group or a company, and suddenly their obligations are different. And I think that the nature of the system is that when you become president of the United States, your primary responsibility is to protect what are seen as national interests. And it's hard to argue, even though average Americans don't see very much of the total, let's say, profit, certainly, from these extractive industries, we all do benefit. You mentioned driving, that's one example, heating, cooling, and so forth. And so when you're president, it's understandable that when people say, you know, we've got to deal with these things, we've got to keep this stuff flowing, and then we need you to, you know, frame it as one of not just patriotism, but also one of international goodwill, even though they know that that's not true. They have to do that. And so I agree with you, and I guess my point would be that we need to step beyond this, and we need to understand the nature of how the world works, and not just accept it, but to see if we don't like it, what can we do to change it? And that's where it comes into issues like alternative energies, reducing consumption. What can be done on that front? And sadly, those topics are not very sexy, and they get relatively little scrutiny either by the government or by the media.
Well, conservation isn't very profitable either.
It isn't, and unfortunately, conservation itself is sort of treated as a kind of an isolated thing, because I know, for example, a lot of people who their entire involvement is to personally be sort of parsimonious with resources. You know, they're very proud of the fact that they've got a compost heap and they drive a certain kind of car and so on, and that's great, but that in itself is not going to change. It sets a good example for some others, but it's not going to change things fast enough to make a difference. And so we all have to be involved in educating the broader mass about what is at stake here. And I would argue that if each person every day, for example, just forwarded an article, whether it's our article at Who, What, Why, or another article, to 20 people or 40 people, that they're expanding the awareness of this stuff and the sort of the awareness of the urgency, real urgency. I mean, this is not some abstract thing. There are more and more studies suggesting that there may not even be life on Earth for our grandchildren to enjoy. So, I mean, this is a real, real crisis.
Yeah, and education is one of the things that you do so well, Russ, and I really appreciate that. And for those listeners who may have just joined us, we're visiting with Russ Baker of WhoWhatWhy.com. He's an independent investigative journalist, and he's also written an excellent book that we have at the Peace and Justice Center, and you can order online or get it at Tome on the Range. It's called Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. Jim, you had a question?
I just wanted to say, in terms of putting out information right here, I wouldn't want to put out that conservation does not make sense business-wise as well as environmental-wise. I think countries that have really and companies that have dedicated to it have saved money, saved energy, saved cost. It does. I think it does make sense,
yeah,
from my understanding.
Except yes, and I don't want to take away from the interview with Russ, but to me, even when solar and wind folks are talking, they don't say use less energy. They say convert to solar or wind, and I think we need to be doing both. We need to be conserving and converting to more sustainable sources of energy.
Right, and by the way, I mean, I totally agree with that. I didn't mean to diminish conservation. What I meant to say is that as a personal act, it is not enough.
Right.
And we need to talk more broadly about consumption and the whole mentality. I mean, even in the United States, there's a notion, for example, that our country should be driven by growth. And, you know, that's a formula for the end of the world.
Yep.
You cannot grow endlessly. The notion that every company should grow, that there should be constantly new houses being built on a large scale, new roads and so on, there's a consequence for all of this, and you cannot do it forever. You could have done it for a long time when you had the frontier and relatively sparse populations, or populations such as Native Americans that the settlers didn't care about, but it's not tenable anymore. And if you look at other civilizations, and very interesting to look at countries like Bhutan that are really a leader in understanding these things, as well as in many respects Europe, where they basically work with what they've got and they're constantly upgrading and refurbishing and what have you, that the whole approach in this country, the kind of unspoken philosophy, is very, very faulty.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
I'm so glad you said that, Russ, because I was listening to an interview on NPR the other day with a voter in Wisconsin, and she was going on and on. She said she supported Romney because he's anti-abortion, and then she said something I've never heard anybody say out loud. She says, and you know, that's wrong. We need growth. We need more population. And my head almost exploded. And I didn't know that was that deep-seated, that somebody would actually use that as a rational for anti-abortion, that we need to grow. I mean, obviously, we've passed carrying capacity a long time ago.
A long time ago.
It blew my mind right out there.
Yeah. I mean, there's a basic problem in this country, which is that the average American is very poorly informed about things that really matter. Now, the average American is not poorly informed about things that don't matter. And this is the fault in part of our media, but in part the media is simply responding to public taste, and so it's a kind of a vicious circle. It's one of our challenges at Who, What, Why, where we're trying to figure out how can we grow a news organization that publishes things, really, we try to do it only on things that actually matter. That's not to say people don't have a right to entertain themselves with professional sports and gossip and things like that, but that doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. And, you know, you can tell because when you deal in a personal situation with your life and you have some sort of crisis and you think about in an emergency, what are the things you don't do? There are things like, you know, watching football games and so on, but you still do run the gas. You still do utilize resources. You still need medical care. You still are concerned about your child who went off to Afghanistan and so on. And so you can separate what really does matter from what doesn't. Our challenge is to try to kind of go in that direction and see, can we interest enough people in what I call adult education? You know, they use that term adult education as meaning people who voluntarily take, you know, distance learning courses or learn to folk dance or whatever it is. But in fact, we all need constant adult education. We all constantly need new information. If you look at professionals, architects, doctors, and so forth, they all have to take continuing education courses in order to remain certified and competent in their field. And I think we all need to take continuing education to remain competent and certified as good functioning citizens. And what you were talking about, that story about the woman who made the comment about abortion, these are people who really understand incredibly little, and they're very, very easily misled and propagandized. And of course, that's dangerous, not just in in terms of them not being effective, but also in terms of the potential for the rise of really dangerous repressive forces. In any country that saw that happen, the public was victimized by not understanding what was going on.
So, Russ, we've got a young co-host here with us, Alex, who's 14 years old, a local high school student. She's a freshman, and she does great research in the lead-up to our show, and she went to your website. Alex, when you were visiting Russ's website, did you find it accessible? Was it stuff you hear on the mainstream news?
Well, I found it really interesting. I don't find this stuff very often. I have a question for Russ right now, or a comment.
Sure, it's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you. Well, like you were saying, adult education, there's a problem with that because most people don't want adult education. It's a tricky thing because, like you said, the masses, it's hard to get people to do that.
What do you mean they don't want? Well, people don't want to know. They don't want to be educated. Is that what you mean, Alex?
Most people, a good majority of people, usually like to live in ignorance.
They just want to be entertained.
Exactly.
I agree with that to some extent, Alex. I think there are two sides to that. Being entertained is like, you know, it's like eating donuts. You know, it tastes good, but it ain't good for you.
Yeah,
and,
right.
It's good for you a little bit. You know, we all ought to be able to indulge in some delicious yet unhealthy foods here and there. We all ought to be able to be entertained. But when you get to the point where you need to be entertained all the time, you're kind of descending in terms of human potential to lower and lower levels. And it's the same thing. It's not just being entertained. I think a lot of people feel helpless.
Yeah.
And they feel powerless, and so they find the news depressing. They find information depressing because they don't feel that they have the capability or the energy to take any of these things on, and so they kind of hide in these other things. And the sort of jingoistic sort of reporting that you see on, say, the Fox News Channel and what have you, that appeals to people because it is entertaining. It's very simplistic, and it gives people a kind of a fantasy sort of comic book sense of how things work that make them feel good about themselves and their country without them having to lift a finger.
Right. Good points. Folks, we are visiting with Russ Baker of whowhatwhy.com. And if you don't know what forensic journalism is, you've got to go to his website and learn more because we need more people doing what Russ is doing. And we actually, Russ, can you stay with us? I do have to go to a break to thank our sponsors.
Yes, sure.
Okay, so folks, please stay tuned. There's going to be much more here from Russ Baker, and we've also got Jim Turr with us, who's always got some interesting things to say. So please, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Estella's Cafe opened its doors in 1950 and has been family-owned and operated now for three generations. Estella's is proud to serve local produce from Infinity Farms in Rebetta, New Mexico, local grass-fed beef from Hobo and Vicitos Ranches, and red chili produced by the same local family farm for over 20 years. Estella's is now selling takeout orders for sourdough and whole wheat bread loaves and rolls made in-house. Just call in your orders to 454-0048. Also try Estella's in-house fresh-made pickle served with delicious sandwiches and local grass-fed ground beef burgers and mini burgers. Open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and Thursday and Friday from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. Come in to experience a taste of tradition and don't forget to ask about their special of the day. That's Estella's Cafe, 148 Bridge Street in Las Vegas, New Mexico. Phone 454-0048.
We're really grateful, all of our sponsors. We've really got some great local sponsors. I really like the people who support our show and keep us on the air and allow us to visit with people like Russ Baker of whowhatwhy.com, and that's who we're talking with this morning, along with Jim Turr. And as we've mentioned, folks, Russ is one of the best independent investigative journalists that we've got today. He's doing forensic journalism, thinking hard, digging deep. You should check out his website, whowhatwhy.com, and check out his book. Excellent book. called Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. We're hiding history, Russ?
It's hard to believe, but, you know, even after years in journalism covering big stories for big news outlets, I was surprised to find out how little I actually understood about what was going on in this country and had been going on for a long time, that there were really sort of profound explanations that were entirely missing from the media, from major historians' accounts, and from what we were getting in academia, a deeper, more profound analysis backed by, you know, actual documented facts.
Right. Jim?
Well, Russ, I wanted to say that about your book, that I was glad to hear that it's caught on in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Because I love the premise of your book, as I've heard you describe it, which is that you started with a question. How did an unlikely guy like George W. Bush happen to become president? And you just seem to have stuck like a dog on that question and gone through every alley, and it expanded to a whole book to research that question and stay with it. And it's so interesting, and I don't want to say, I happen to know that when you were in Vegas, you even followed up on somebody in Vegas who related to one of the stories in your book, and I won't say, I don't even know the outcome, and I won't say who I know you interviewed, but it's interesting that those strings just go everywhere.
Yeah, that's such a great point, Jim. Yeah, they really do, and I continue my research that I did for Family of Secrets in part in pieces that we do on Who, What, Why, although Who, What, Why is more contemporary reporting, but also in a new book that I'm working on. But everywhere I go, yes, I run into people, and this particular individual and I have stayed in touch, and that's leading in interesting directions. And so there are people out there everywhere who have pieces of things. Like, we hear on Who, What, Why, we hear from people every day who come forward and say, you know, I read your piece and it got me thinking, and, you know, here's something you should know. My neighbors are, you know, the special forces, and something that they've been involved in, you know. And this is great, and this is a kind of a, it allows, I don't know if you'd call it a citizen reporting, but it allows the public to participate and to funnel useful information in so that we can continue an open-minded dig into why things are the way they are. I want to stress the term open-minded, because I've got problems with both the sort of traditional media, in the sense of not that they're bad people, but that they are limited in how candid they can be about what they think is really going on, but also the so-called alternative media, because I find that to be another sort of hidebound institution with its own constraints on open inquiry, where there's a kind of a line, a kind of a party line, and there really isn't openness when the facts turn out to be different than they had been presented. And, you know, this is one of the things we're trying to do on Who, What, Why, is when we see something and it turns out we're wrong about it. I just heard about something in my book. I don't know how it happened, and it seems like it's wrong. And, you know, I want to get right to the publisher, because the Family of Secrets is still selling very, very well, and ask them if they can continue to make changes, you know, to the manuscript so that it continues to get more and more accurate. So, yeah, I mean, open-minded inquiry, it's amazing where it can lead you. And as you point out with Family of Secrets, I really did not have an agenda. I just was fascinated with the idea that this unlikely fellow would not only could become president, but that so many people of means wanted him specifically out of all the sort of Republicans they could have chosen, with at least, you know, years of experience and general competency, that they chose this particular person. That then got me looking at what he represented, and more largely what his family represented, and what the family itself had done over the course of decades, and how it fit into this larger framework of resource extraction. So what was the purpose of, and what is the purpose of, the Bush family in the minds of these very, very wealthy and powerful people who largely remain in the background?
Right. Two things that you said while you were talking there I want to follow up on. One is that you mentioned civic journalism or citizen reporting. You actually have a place on your website where people can submit tips to you, right? for stories?
Yes, in fact, that's very, very important. Both the tips and also, you know, the comments themselves that people make. I think given the low quality of comments often online, whowhatwhy.com sort of has gone in the other direction. The preponderance of comments are not pejorative, and they're not people just sniping at each other. They're people actually raising interesting points, adding from their own knowledge and so forth. So, yeah, we very much believe in that.
And I want to comment on that. That is absolutely true what you said about you the folks who post comments under your articles as opposed to so many other websites. But part of the credit for that goes not only to your readers and your followers, but to you. You keep the discussion really helpful and educational, and you yourself respond back to people's comments, which I think is really, really helpful. Folks, it's a great website. If you've not been, you've got to visit whowhatwhy.com. And it's not, you know, Russ is not a conspiracy theorist. He's not a coincidence theorist. He is an open-minded investigative journalist that gathers all the pieces together and finds out what's really going on behind a story.
When are you coming to Vegas again, Russ?
Well, I don't know immediately, although it's a charming place with the charming folks such as yourselves, and I'd certainly love to visit again.
That would be great. You also said, I think I heard you say, you're working on a new book?
I am. I'm not publicly talking about it at this point, I will just say that it'll continue pursuing some of the unanswered questions that were addressed to some point in Family of Secrets. I don't want to say it's a sequel because it goes in a quite a different direction, but I hope the purpose of these books is to kind of be a sort of a roto-rooter in our conversation and in our democracy, such as it is, to kind of unplug some of these blocked areas. And as you know, I'm very, very interested in unresolved controversies where the public feels that the media won't deal with them. You mentioned conspiracy. Certainly, we are concerned about not shying away from things because they are labeled a certain way.
Right. Yes.
And you know, so we put things on the site and we just say, hey, here's a curious thing. What do you make of this? Now, a lot of my friends in the corporate media just know not to do that. You just know the editor's going to say, oh, come on, you're not getting into that subject, are you? And so we try now. We do get complaints from activists in certain areas like 9/11 because they want us to write what they believe to have happened, but we wouldn't do that. We might look into particular aspects as we obtained information, and we would make that information available, but we would not advance a line just because people believe it to be the case. I mean, in fact, we have a story on the site relating to 9/11, which is really, I think, done in the proper and traditional journalistic way, and we're certainly open to doing more things, but we have to do them based on original reporting, tremendous caution, and the ability to document things in the way that you know I was taught at the Columbia Journalism School.
All right, and folks, I would encourage you when you go to the website to sign up for the email list. Russ is very respectful. It's very light traffic, and he only sends you stuff that's important and gives you time in between emails to read and check things out. It's one of the best email listservs that I'm on. It's he's just very respectful of the folks who sign up there. So, gosh, we really appreciate your work. We've got about 8 minutes left, and I wondered if you wanted to say anything about this upcoming election.
Yeah, you know, in an election year, it's very difficult to talk about politics and policy without getting sort of sucked into the horse race and the way that the thing is framed. And at Who, What, Why, we try to resist that. And you'll notice that if you compare it to most of the other sites, they're so heavy in, you know, Romney said this and Obama said that,
yep,
and this person's lying and so forth. And we just try to eschew that as much as we can. But I was recently out in California. I gave some talks where the theme was what's at stake in the November election and what, unfortunately, is not. And my analysis is that there are some real and major differences between Obama and Romney on certain issues and in certain respects. And then there is also the ways in which there is almost no difference. And I think that we need to acknowledge both. In other words, that it is important to vote. It is important to realize what those differences are. But it's also important not to pretend that there is such a major difference, whichever one of the candidates you may favor, and to not recognize that the entire conversation in this country is severely constrained, that the even our choices in terms of who can get into the general election in a presidential race, who the media cover in the primaries, who's taken seriously and so forth, that all of this is delimited, and it's delimited so that whichever person wins on many of these big issues, particularly on the control by big money of the democracy, and I use democracy in quotes because I'm not sure how effective a democracy it is anymore, but also in terms of the big cash cow, which is foreign policy and war and the riches related to that, and as you, again, on who, what, why, we were constantly talking about that, about resource extraction, which we think is the central issue worldwide. So as far as the election goes, I think we need to recognize that Barack Obama would never have raised the kind of big money that he did, would not have been treated as well as he was by the media and by powerful interests, think tanks, or what have you, unless he was deemed to be a quote-unquote serious and responsible person. Now, those terms already mean that a person buys into certain certitudes, is willing to play a certain game and a certain approach. And actually, as you see under Obama, the United States specifically, and particularly through the drones, is involved in wars in at least five countries, perhaps more, however you count that, is continuing in many respects the foreign policy of the Bush administration, albeit perhaps seeking to move out of the countries faster as surrogates can be put in place and so forth. So differences, but also a lot of similarities. Not a proper effort to identify the extent to which the political system has been corrupted by money and to do something about it. Not a significant effort to really protect ordinary Americans. There could have been very bold efforts to protect people from their homes being foreclosed. There were a lot of options. Obama sat on his hands, obviously bailed out the banks. So we need to be cognizant of those kind of things. And, of course, I'm happy to talk about what the differences are. I think I've mentioned a few, but there are plenty of others, particularly on domestic policy and on regulatory policy. But it's only a matter of degrees.
Are you, Russ, looking at all into this killing of the ambassador to Libya and his colleagues? That's a strange story.
Yeah, we are, because, you know, the world continues to get stranger and stranger at a rapid pace. And a lot of these things, when we read the reports, they just don't add up right. And as you may know, on Who, What, Why, we have an article. You can read it in the right-hand column under Original Investigations, as there are longer pieces, about when the raid in Abbottabad, Pakistan, where we were told that they had killed Osama bin Laden and then quickly disposed of his body by throwing it into the sea. And we had many, many questions about that, just logical ones, and things, inconsistencies, claims that were reversed and never explained, things that just didn't make any sense. And it's the same thing with this. A lot of this doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So, yes, we are looking, actually, as we speak, at that and looking at certain aspects. We'd like to be able to break out and provide the public with some new understanding of it. The primary difficulty that we have at Who, What, Why is very simply this. Only a tiny percentage of people who like what we do, who believe in what we do, and who want us to do more of it will actually take any kind of a concrete step to support us. And so the contributions, even though they're tax deductible and even though they go extremely far, come from a tiny, tiny fraction, even of our regular readers, even of the people who go to the site every day or once a week, love it and recommend it. Very few of them will even, you know, drop a small amount into the hat. And so, unfortunately, we've got a long list of stories like the one you just mentioned. We would love to to be in a position where our readers say to us, hey, could you look into this? And we say, yep, we're on it. You know, we'd like to be able to work for you, the public, but we unfortunately cannot do it unless we've got greater resources, because we do have to pay people, and they've got to be able to survive.
Right. And folks, when you do go to whowhatwhy.com, there is a link for how you can help support this work and make a donation. You can also buy Russ's book, Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years, and tell others about the website. Spread the word, because it really is good investigative journalism. Russ, I think it was in today's New York Times, the latest piece of this story about the ambassador to Libya, that there was this span of time where he was alone, locked in a room, and that some villagers broke into the embassy, rescued him, and took him to a hospital, and the only thing wrong with him was smoke inhalation. He actually died from smoke inhalation. There were no injuries on him or anything like that. Did you hear that piece of the story?
There are some aspects of what happened to him that are certainly unclear. It's odd how new pieces of that keep coming out, and why it is so hard to understand what actually happened to him. You'd have to believe that in a country like Libya, where the United States was so avid in its bombing and covert efforts to undermine and remove the Gaddafi regime. By the way, Who What Why was a leader in reporting on Libya. I want to emphasize that. We've received quite a bit of praise. Bill Moyers, among others, said that he was getting some of his best information on Libya from Who, What, Why.
Wow, that's great.
And so, you know, we were looking back then at anomalies and irregularities. I think that the United States, being that it is supposedly dominant and in control in Libya, supposedly, should, and with the kind of intelligence resources it has, and even just simple phone calls, should have been able to clarify within hours what the actual narrative was. It reminds me again of this Bin Laden raid, where days and weeks and months later they were changing the story.
Yep.
I have to think that there's some reason for that something else is afoot. And I'm also very, very interested in the precipitating factor, the video, and several of ours, you know, we at Who What Why, we're trying to run a sort of a training academy for the next generation of journalists, and we have some young folks who are very, very talented and have great potential, and we're guiding them, and they're actually looking into a few aspects of this.
That's great.
Because even the film itself, and who really made it, and what the actual purpose of this really awful, awful film was, other than just inciting people in that region, I think we need to look at that, and we need to always, always ask the question, the Latin term, qui bono, who benefits from all of this.
Right. Well, we have about a minute and a half left. What, in closing, what would you like to share with our listeners? We've got people locally who listen on AM and FM, and we've actually learned that we've got listeners around the world at KFUNonline.com. We've got quite a faithful following that's growing. So speak to all those folks, Russ.
Okay. Well, and also, by the way, we'd love to put up a link on Who, What, Why to this interview. We try to share two-way. People get to hear those interviews who didn't hear them at the time, and also get to hear the name KFUN, because we're very, very big into promoting independent radio. We wish you all the success in the world, and we know that what you're doing is enormously important. We consider you our partner, effectively.
Great. Thank you.
And I might just mention, by the way, we also are on Twitter. If folks do that, it's at Who, What, Why. I'd love to have you do that. And also, if you're on Facebook, we've got a Facebook page for Who, What, Why. Those are other vehicles for sort of creating a sense of community to allow our larger readership to communicate with each other, to share ideas. We really want to build a community here, and we think that that is the path to building a more robust democracy and to turning these things around and to getting ideas to bubble up and not just down.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. Folks, we've been visiting with Russ Baker at whowhatwhy.com, and he also wrote a book, Family of Secrets. Thank you so much, Russ, for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good rest of your weekend, and keep up the great work.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. So, folks, we've got to go, and it's a bummer because I had a couple of pieces of Jim Terz that I wanted to play. So maybe we can convince you to come back, Jim?
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you.
Okay. And we are going to have an after show at the Spick and Span. In fact, if you go to Jim Terz, oh, no, the picture of Spick and Span isn't at that website, right?
Yeah, it is.
It is, okay.
I just took off the little sign.
Oh, okay, great. So join us for brunch at the Spick and Span, and if you want to talk more, we also have Russ's book that we'll bring with us, and you can check that out. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, and we'll see you on the radio next week. Bye-bye.
Las Vegas, New Mexico.